Hi, I'm James. I'm a undergraduate student from the College of Florida. I'm going to skip the first part of my paper because I don't think I'm going to say anything about Kropotkin that hasn't already been said.
Thank you.
Just referencing mutual aid, the history of his use of archaeology, blah, blah, blah. So instead, I'm going to talk about archaeology as it is commonly used in anarchist discourse today. Today, archaeology is again an influential field in anarchist discourse, particularly in the strand of anarchist thought, often called anarcho-primitivism or anti-civilization anarchism. For the purposes of this presentation, I will simply refer to this branch as primitivism, and I'd like to note that I'm not conflating all of the thought commonly denoted by the term green anarchism into this category. Green anarchism is an umbrella term. There's lots of strands of thoughts. You can't just, stick it all in one camp. That said, I think some of the basic tenets of primitivism resemble Marx's ideas on the role of technology. In the earliest times, there's a sort of primitive communism. Specialization leads to slavery, and technological innovation leads to feudalism. There are two major departures in primitivist thought, though, from Marx's stages of materialist history. Through the work of John Zerzan, many primitivists now believe that language, symbolic thought, such as mathematics, art, and the concept of time are the developments which limit human freedom and lead to alienation. And B, rather than a transition into communism from capitalism, there will be or should be, depending on who you ask, a collapse of civilization and capitalism with it that will hopefully lead to a return to wildness free from slavery and the alienation of civilization. So I'm going to give a brief history of primitivism, and then discuss some of its uses and what I see as misuses of archaeological and anthropological data. Contemporary primitivism begins to form as a political ideology labeled primitivism as such in the 1970s. One of the main catalysts is the journal Fifth Estate, which was based in Detroit. And the ideas and argument forms from strains of Marxist thought in which the nature of technology itself lies at the core of what is alienating and oppressive about capital, and this leads to a rejection of the proletariat as a possible revolutionary actor. The thinkers typically cited for this conception of technology as the problem are, and pardon my French isn't great, Jacques Ellul and Jacques Camus. Ellul was a Christian anarchist who viewed modern technology as the seminal threat to human freedom and the Christian faith. And Camus was of the opinion, or is of the opinion, I believe he's still alive, that capital has been so totalitarian in nature that class struggle is impossible. Instead, there can only be a struggle between humanity and capital itself. But because the logic of capital has infected everyone, basically, through globalization, that the only possible choice for freedom is to leave the world and live closer to nature and raise the future generation, the children, in a way as to not sully their naturally sane spirit. By the 90s, much primitivist thought began to coalesce around John Zerzan, who positions himself against both civilization and the left. Zerzan takes the radical position to its extremes, arguing that everything from plant domestication, music, writing, math, art, and language are forms or sources of alienation. All forms of symbolic representation, anything other than the pure, direct, unmediated experience, are shackles on human freedom, and that these shackles can only be broken through the destruction of civilization in its entirety and a return to a time before we lost our wildness. Now I'm going to go into some of the uses of anthropological and archaeological thought in primitivist discourse. The most pervasive and obvious use of archaeology within primitive discourse are the claims that hierarchy doesn't exist before the rise of agriculture. You see this very often. The commonly heard slogan is that we were all anarchists up to 10,000 years ago. And to be fair, in some ways this is true if one conceives of anarchy as simply the absence of the state. But while the absence of a state may make a society an anarchy, it does not make it anarchist, in the sense of having or promoting the values and beliefs of the political philosophy noted as anarchism. Another common claim is that before civilization, war and organized violence were absent, and humans were more connected with nature and left little negative impact on the environment. The anthropologist Harold Barclay, when addressing primitivist discourse, notes that it is as if primitivists read archaeological and ethnographic texts with special romantic glasses. In both the archaeological and ethnographic records, it is certainly true that certain societies are seemingly more pacifistic and ecologically sound than our own, but this is in no case a universal fact of, you know, what we call egalitarian societies. It seems that primitivism glosses over or ignores evidence that does not lend itself to their position. Certain works by Marshall Salin, Stanley Diamond, Richard Lee, and Jerry Diamond will be mentioned again and again, but the innumerable accounts, both archaeological and ethnographic, that contain accounts of vicious raids, murder, patriarchally structured societies, gender general inequality, matrilineal societies that are actually run by males, not fathers, but by the mother's brothers. Hunter-gatherers as ecological nightmare. This is referring mostly to the death of megafauna and the big game hunters theory of that, and things like, what is that? I can't even remember the site. Well, the bison fell off the cliff. Anyways. Thank you. All right. and egalitarian hunter-gatherers who practice slavery. For every example of a seemingly as good as it gets egalitarian, pastoral, or foraging society, there is a counterexample of a group using virtually the same subsistence strategy with very different results in the social sphere. The evidence just doesn't support that the technological base creating the superstructure of a society creates the political and social realm. Instead, it is a far more complex sort of networking that can't be reduced to that sort of reduction. Biological anthropology is also used in primitivist discourse, and Brendan talked a little about this earlier. Zerzan takes the position that Homo erectus, Homo habilis, Neanderthals, and the like were possessed of the same mental and physical capacity as Homo sapiens, and furthermore lived in a primal abyss for more than 2 million years. Now, the biological evidence supporting, you know, our intellectual prowess versus Homo erectus, really, there's no point of arguing it. I don't think the neurobiology is to the point where we can say a brain of this size does this, a brain of this size does that. There's nothing in there that is really of much use. But he claims that these ancestors were in some ways more intelligent because they had been enlightened through their wild hunter-gatherer lifestyle and thus wisely steered clear of symbolic representation and technology, thus choosing nature over culture. In Zerzan's view, it is with the emergence of symbolic culture in the Upper Paleolithic that the alienation of civilization begins. He points to the absence of evidence for symbolic culture before this point to claim that speech, art, and the like didn't exist prior to this period in a sort of absence of evidence as evidence against. And we know that Homo erectus, the hyoid bone, was the same shape as, like more or less the same shape as ours, rather than the shape of the hyoid seen in the Australopithecines, which is closer to that of the great apes. But the question of whether Homo erectus used their hyoid bones to facilitate speech as we do today is not a question that we can really answer. You know, the anatomy suggests that yes, they probably had the capacity to use speech, but whether they did or not, it's not something I don't think we're going to find in the material record, right? There is no unifying agreement within primitivism on how the mechanisms leading to the collapse of civilization should come about. Most do not actively wish for a great global catastrophe like nuclear war, but instead hope for a gradual process of negative population growth. Some take a more aggressive stance and view humankind as a virus, that needs to be largely or entirely eradicated. Several thinkers on the left, both anarchist and non-anarchist, have pointed out that due to the carrying capacity of the planet, the human population have to be decreased by at least 99% in order for the population remaining to be able to successfully employ a hunter-gatherer subsistence strategy. Some primitivists deny the severity of the numbers, while others maintain that a reduction in numbers of that magnitude is either desirable or a necessary sacrifice for the good of the planet and humanity's chance at real freedom. Nearly all primitivists will denounce the classic anarchist strategy of building a new society in the shell of the old as outmoded leftism, arguing that only the complete destruction of all existing structures and institutions, followed by a return to our instinctual wildness, could possibly bring about real liberation. That said, in the practice of many self-proclaimed primitivists I have known, they're ardent activists, anarchist activists, working with everything from Fruit Not Bombs to indie media. Given the ideas of primitivism, one may expect that someone with these beliefs would either be living like a survivalist in the deep woods or relocating to remote islands and attempting to revive Stone Age technologies. Confronted with this, what seems to be a contradiction at times, I have to quote David Graeber in one of his latest works, Direct Action, where he says it is hard to avoid asking the same question Evans Pritchard asked about Zande witchcraft. How can otherwise reasonable people claim to believe this sort of thing? The critiques of civilization, progress, and technology coming out of primitivism are not without use. Agriculture and industry definitely need serious changes. There is also a lot to be learned from the so-called egalitarian societies of the present and from the archaeological record. Anarchism can and should continue to engage with archaeology and anthropology. It has been demonstrated that the most efficient farmers in the United States are the old order Amish, cultivating farms of 50 or so acres with horses and mules. It is not if the past doesn't have things to teach us. Rather than ignore the nasty bits of egalitarian societies, we should instead be analyzing and examining their political, social, and economic structures in order to inform current anarchist theory and practice regarding organization and society. We need to spend time learning what doesn't work, as well as what might. The archaeological record provides anarchism the proof that other worlds are possible. And what I mean by that is that through the archaeological record, we can see that there are a lot of different ways that humans have lived over the course of a very long time. And that not any one way seems to be inherently like perfect. I mean, we're not talking about this was the utopian society, let's go back to there. And so basically, I don't think that civilization is this theological process, that civilization has started, so now everything is going to go in this negative direction until civilization is ended. I think when you build civilization as a trope or process like that, what really are you talking about? What is civilization? Is it domestication? Is it agriculture? Is it symbolic thought? I don't think there's any way to really pin it down to what it is other than perhaps to say that it's, you know, whatever we can find in the material record. And I don't think that's particularly useful. So unfortunately, while cultural anthropology and anarchism have recently had a lot of interplay, anarchist archaeologists don't seem to be sharing the upswing. There are people like Teresa Kintz, a fairly well-known anarcho-primitivist archaeologist, but anarchist archaeologists coming out of the more classic conception of anarchism don't seem to be engaging with the anarchist community. This may be to very low numbers, or through avoiding coming out of the circle A closet, as it were. And the academe can be a very restricting force, as we've seen in the past, which may leave a lot of people, archaeologists with anarchist sentiments, not coming out and being like, I'm an archaeologist, I'm an anarchist, here's where I stand. That said, a lack of anarchist archaeologists in the spotlight does not prevent any anarchist from engaging with archaeology. Though not explicitly anarchist in orientation, I found the works of archaeologists such as Dean Saida, Randall McGuire, and Christopher Tilley to be both inspiring and useful. And I'm not going to try to give a whole account of that, especially with Professor McGuire in the room. I'll let him, you know, him speak for his own work. So I guess the crux of what I'm trying to say here is that it's not that I don't think there are useful critiques and ideas coming out of what is called primitivism or green anarchism in general, but instead that we need to engage with the ethnographic and archaeological data in ways that don't just highlight, well, this was really, really good, or this is, you know, fucking awful, but instead say, well, why did things get so awful? What exactly are the mechanisms in the social and political order, or in the economic base and the technology that leads to the alienation and exploitation that we all want to end? And I don't think you can't take the easy way out where it's, you know, critique of civilization, we'll just, you know, throw it out the window, let's not talk about it at all because I'm not a primitivist, or, you know, civilization equals complete exploitation, so let's not even bother dissecting civilization. It's like we'll just say civilization and we'll mean all those bad things that we're going to try to encapsulate with that term. I hope this, it's short because I cut out the beginning thing with Dr. Pakin. I hope this symposium encourages further engagement between anarchism and archaeology, and I hope that we get to some good discussions based around it. Thanks.